Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan Franzen, Gina McAndrews, and Paul Wearson.
Thanks, Mike. And we're happy to offer our listeners a full range of stories, starting with homelessness today, details of history, a violent period in Iowa's past, Prairie Fest in Huxley, and a conversation with the playwright and world premiere writer of the play to be presented next weekend at Ankeny Community Theater. And Paul, Paul Wearson is here to respond and welcome Leanne Harder, giving us the Story County Report. We haven't heard one of those for a while.
Yes, welcome, Leanne. Paul here. I didn't realize you had been on vacation. Last week, I made a call to you because I looked out of my window when they were laying new pavement out here on E18.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, no, this is great, but it's going to disrupt my life. I better call Leanne because she knows what's happening in the county. Well, turned out great because just in 1 week, they laid new blacktop from Highway 69 on E18 all the way to Roland. And this week, they're laying new pavement on the road that intersects that and goes into Story City. So I have the luxury of driving on brand new pavement all the way to town, and I'm a happy camper. But I think you were on vacation, right, Leanne?
I was in and out, and then, yes, I was away on vacation for a while. It was very nice to get away.
Well, welcome back, and give us all the hot stuff about what's happening in Story County.
Well, thank you, and it is good to be back, and I have a lot. So I will speak very quickly, I think, this morning. I want to start out by, and I'll come back to the E18 project, because there's a little bit more to that. But starting last week, Story County resumed the requirement to having visitors wearing masks in all Story County buildings. Visitors in county buildings over the age of two, regardless of vaccination status, must wear a face covering unless the individual has a disability preventing them from wearing a face covering. As we all know, COVID-19 cases are rising in our community as a result of the Delta variant, which is more contagious than previous variants. Based on the latest CDC guidelines released July 27th, which advise wearing a mask indoors in public areas if in an area with high transmission rates or substantial rates, masks should be required, and the majority of Iowa counties, including Story County, are considered high transmission rates. We have disposable face coverings when you come into the building entrances at each county building that you can take for your use. That being said, all county buildings remain open to walk-in traffic. You can also conduct business and online. You can look at our website. There's a vast majority of information, but we're available by phone, email, mail. There's drop boxes outside county buildings. So if you have any questions, you can contact individual departments directly, or again, look at our website. For ADA accommodations or to request a pediatric face covering, you can contact the county's ADA coordinator at 515-382-7204. And at such time that the requirement does change, we'll let everyone know and publicize that as well. We also have a very new segment, or relatively new segment, on our website. It's been a couple months now. And social media, where we're working with the Story County Animal Shelter here in Nevada and sharing a weekly adoptable pet from the animal shelter. So we started this earlier this year in 2021 for adoptable cat of the week. Then we started thinking maybe there's some other critters out there that are looking for their forever homes. So you can check our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov. Our social media pages on the midweek, and we show the new animal, and there have been a lot of really cute adoptable pets, everything from guinea pigs, dogs, cats, and I'm sure we'll have some other ones come on as well. I just want to share some new faces in Story County. Kimberly Grandinetti, I hope I can say her name right. I'll apologize to her later today if I mispronounce it, but she is our new environmental health director. She's originally from Moline, Illinois. She came to us from the Moline, Illinois area, attended Illinois State University, and then started to study biochemistry, but then ended up taking an intro to environmental health class and then decided to pursue that degree. She comes to us from many years in the local government sector. That's where she has spent her entire career up to this point, and she likes that closer connection to community. She's worked mostly in Illinois, but for a few years, she's been working in Jackson County, Iowa. The second new face you may hear from or see in the very foreseeable future is Sarah Carmichael. She is from Florida originally, but has been in Iowa for the past 6 years. She is Story County's new watershed coordinator. That is a very new position for Story County. It started actually just this July as part of our ongoing efforts for watershed planning at a county scale. She has her Bachelor of Science degree in Environmental Science and Policy from the University of South Florida, has worked in AmeriCorps, has worked in Atlanta and earned her Master's in Global Environmental Health, concentrating on issues related to drinking water and wastewater. She lived in Washington, D.C., and then came to Iowa, and before starting here at Story County, was the Executive Director of the Iowa Rivers Revival. So both these individuals are going to be great assets to Story County, and please help me joining them and join me in welcoming them to Story County. Paul, I'm going to get to your E18 story here. I'm not going to talk about the pavement, but there was a bridge on E18 closed for a bridge replacement. And I spoke on that earlier this year. There was a substantial detour in place. As of last week, that bridge is open. So you now have new paving, new asphalt, and a new bridge, at least the one in under Story County's jurisdiction. I wanted to speak a little bit on the new program and funding that Story County is partnering with the Ames Chamber of Commerce Foundation. It's called the Story County COVID-19 Workforce Retraining Program. It was a plan presented by the Ames Chamber of Commerce Foundation. It will support retraining of 400 or more Story County residents in career areas experiencing high growth. It's a great initiative that Story County is definitely proud to support. It provides education, training, and highly needed skill areas, further assisting meeting the employment needs throughout Story County. It calls for a short-term certificate training to be offered in the areas of certified nurse assistant, both basic and advanced, manufacturing production technician, welding, construction, maintenance electrician technician, patient intake and billing, and phlebotomy over the next 3.5 years. It's a partnership working with Story County organizations, including Des Moines Area Community College, local human service providers, and the faith-based community. Participants in the program can access needed wraparound services such as transportation, childcare, so that they can participate in the training program, help reduce some of the needs that they have out there, so that they can have the time available to get the certifications. Also, stipends will be offered to program participants to encourage participation, program completion, and job attainment. You can contact Brenda Dreyer at the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Her phone number, or the Ames Chamber of Commerce number, is 515-232-2310, or email brenda@ameschamber.com. Training will be launched this fall, so it's like right around the corner. So if you're interested about more, I think there's some information on the Chamber's website as well. Also, I want to just talk a little bit about centralized intake for rent and utility assistance. So starting in July, Story County Community Services, working in conjunction with Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, Salvation Army, and the Bridge Home began a centralized intake process for applications for rent and utility assistance. It is supported by the City of Ames as well. Residents of Story County needing assistance with a current month's rent or utilities can apply for assistance from multiple programs at one location with one application. So much simplified. They've simplified the process incredibly. Applications are taken on an appointment basis. You visit Story County Community Services at 126 South Kellogg, Suite 001 in Ames. Want to plug the Story County Mental Health Expo coming up Tuesday, September 21st. From 5 to 7:30 p.m. You can look at storycountymhexpo.com for more information. Quick reminder from the Story County Treasurer, Ted Rasmussen. Story County property, and Paul, I hope you have your Kleenex box. Story County property tax statements are scheduled to be mailed out today. Property owners should expect their statements by August 27th. Treasurer Rasmussen does say that if statements are not received by August 31st, please contact the treasurer's office. You can email them at treasurer@storycountyiowa.gov or call 515-382-7340. And last, sign up for Notify Me to stay up to date on what happenings are at Story County. If you're on social media, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, a new addition this summer, our weekly Board of Supervisors video recaps. It's a quick video message each week from your Story County supervisors, bringing you up to date on board actions. And you can watch all those on social media as well. So again, our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov. You can contact me, Leanne Harder, at lharder@storycountyiowa.gov or 515-382-7247. And in closing, I want to leave you with our mission here at Story County. We are engaging our diverse communities to responsibly provide qualities and services that matter. And thank you, KHOI, for your ongoing partnership and the opportunity to join you every month. And now I need to take a deep breath, because that's it.
Well, Leanne, it's so good to hear from you. Welcome back from vacation. And you have reminded us that our taxes are coming due. Thanks for that. And looking forward to hearing from you in September for all the news and happenings at Story County. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We'll see you in September.
Yeah, and I will have a lot more in September to share. A lot coming up. Have a good week, everyone.
You too, Leanne.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And for those of you who just tuned in, this is Local Talk. And we've just heard from Leanne Harder giving us the Story County Community Report. You will notice that Story County itself is helping with people who are having trouble paying their rent. There's a lot more help coming from the federal funds that we'll be talking about next month. On that subject, however, our guest who has been with us earlier before our break last week, Al Womble, has some reports about the Crestwood apartments. Before we talk to him, we have a little change of pace, and that is
Huxley's Prairie Fest coming up August 27th, 28th, and 29th.
We were able to get an interview with Katie Kinbrade, co-chair of the 2021 Huxley Prairie Fest, with Joe Scharbach, and she's lived in Huxley for 14 years, and this is her way of getting involved with the community.
So that means you've seen quite a few Prairie Fests.
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, the past couple of years, we weren't able to have Prairie Fest last year due to COVID, unfortunately, so we're hoping for a great turnout this year.
Well, it's a two-day festival, isn't it?
It is. It's Friday night and all day Saturday, and then we do have a church service to wrap things up on Sunday morning in the park.
Now, I understand that it's a theme, the Roaring Twenties?
Yep, so we have a different theme every year, and that theme goes on our T-shirts, and it's kind of what our parade is modeled after. So this year is the Roaring Twenties. Of course, that was supposed to be the theme for 2020 since we were going into the new decade. But with COVID, it got pushed back to this year. So I know the floats in the parade are looking at the Roaring Twenties theme, old Hollywood and flapper dresses and things like that. So that should be fun.
Lots of the Charleston and the dancing.
Yes, yep. So we will have two bands playing at Prairie Fest, but it will be modern music. It won't be back to the Roaring Twenties era music.
What are some of the 20s entries that you have in the parade?
We don't really know yet. It's a surprise when the parade starts. It is judged by our community members. So they do kind of like to keep it a secret. I know one float is doing the old Hollywood theme and just some other, you know, Prohibition era type themes for their floats.
Do you have an auto section?
Oh, yes, we will have a car show on Saturday out at the Ballard Creek Assisted Living. I'm not sure how many of the cars from that era are going to be there, but it does usually have a good turnout.
What's the musical act? Andy Anderson and Mike Leeds with the dual. Oh, that's the Dueling Pianos.
Yep, that's the Dueling Pianos. They're actually local out of Huxley, but they do travel all around Iowa to do shows. And during the pandemic, they actually would go around to towns on a flatbed and drive through neighborhoods with their show so that people could still have some entertainment during lockdown. And then we have fireworks that night, too. We do have a few wine and beer tasting, which is usually a big hit. The local breweries and wineries come together, and we have our own local brewery in Huxley called Fence Line Beer Lab, who is organizing that this year. And then we have the Cellar Winery, which is out of Cambridge, just to the east of Huxley. We have Prairie Moon Winery out of Ames. Vinyl Anthems, which is a wine distributor located in Huxley. And then for the beer tasting, we also have Fender's Brewing out of Polk City, Brightside Aleworks, and Reclaimed Rails. So we have quite a few vendors there, so it should be a good time. We have food vendors, inflatables for the kids, bingo, trivia, kind of just something for everyone.
So you have the usual things, the kids' inflatables, petting zoo, face painting,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, and I see you also have a pancake breakfast followed by a fun run.
Yep. So I guess you can choose one or the other if you want to do the run or the pancake breakfast.
Yeah, I would think that. It would be an either or activities.
Yes, and then we do have two musical acts on Saturday night. From 4 to 6, we have Jake Doty. I believe he's out in Nevada. And then we have the musical act Gimmick for our nighttime entertainment. They're kind of a rock band.
And you have some dancing, Amy's School of Dance.
Yep, so Amy's School of Dance is a local dance studio in Huxley. So it's one of their fun recitals that they do annually at Prairie Festival.
Oh, what's a pedal tractor pull?
So it's like the little pedal tractors for kids. They get to pedal for maybe, you know, 50 feet or whatnot, kind of like the big tractor pulls that you see at bigger events. This one's just for kids. So that's what's really nice. You have that hometown feel, but at the same time, we have everything that you would find in a larger event. And like I said, we have so many food trucks, and the new brewery in Huxley is right there. So people are excited to come check it out.
Before we leave the Roaring Twenties, I wanted to play a little music from the era, since the bands they have are not going to be doing that. So I have cut from a 1920s movie playing the Charleston. This is KHOI Community Radio,
where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Continuing the story about Central Iowa's response to the eviction of the tenants of Crestwood Apartments in Davenport, Al Womble is here to tell us about what happened to the clothing household necessities and school supplies that he collected right here at KHOI a couple of weeks ago. I'll turn this interview over to my co-host, Gina McAndrews, who really got involved in collecting supplies.
Thank you, Susan, and hello, Al. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. So where did all of our donations go, and how are everybody in Davenport?
It all wound up in the hands of folks in Davenport, Iowa. The school supplies were a huge hit. I mean, there was nothing left except maybe a couple, you know, markers and pens and some sheets of paper. You know, parents showed up with the lists that the schools give to the children, you know, so they can be ready for the school year. And, you know, people were able to completely fill that list based on the supplies that you folks provided. And that was fantastic. You know, we also had a situation, the one moment that was kind of emotional. Somebody had donated a fairly nice looking dress that we had hanging up. And there was a lady walking around who was collecting some of the different supplies. And we also had like hygiene supplies there, like soap and toothbrush and toothpaste. And toothbrushes and toothpaste, I'll say it, that went real quick. People really wanted those. But when this woman saw this dress, she asked me how much it was. And I said, no, ma'am, it's free. It's all free. And she just said, this is such a nice dress. And then just kind of started to cry a little bit. And then was able to get that dress and then got some more clothes for her kids and filled up a couple bags. So I just thought, you know, wow, somebody, you know, donated this dress. And that dress really made this woman's day. You know, the fact that it was no charge for it and she was able to get that plus clothing for her children, you know, was really quite special. We also collected funds, which we used to help folks with their moving expenses. We also had volunteers there. You know, that we're going over to the Crestwood apartments and helping people move, you know, and our efforts helped people move, helped us get Ryder trucks so that we could pack folks up and take them wherever they needed to go. And, you know, it was overall a good event. But as I was going to this event, I was receiving calls and emails from Cedar Rapids and Waterloo and Sioux City. That they're also wanting me to try and duplicate that event over there. And, you know, I had mentioned while I was there that, you know, it's fantastic that Iowa citizens are gathering and binding together in order to do something about this. But it's also very disheartening that our state government has been granted funds in order to help with these moves. And yet still to this point, only 6% of those funds have actually been used to assist these particular folks. And so it's individuals like, you know, your staff and your listeners there at KHOI and other individuals throughout the state who are gathering together in order to help these folks. But, you know, that day made quite a difference in the lives of a lot of these people, because when they showed up, they're like, well, how much does anything cost? I'm like, no, it's all free. You could just see the kind of wonderment on people's faces, like, oh my gosh, this is really all free. And then it was a fairly moving day.
Full disclosure, according to regulations, KHOI as a non-commercial station is not allowed to say the words free or at no cost, but that is an intent to prevent this from being used to promote events. This is a news report of something that happened in the past.
So you had quite a caravan that you started off. So from your trip to Ames, and then you had an event in Fort Dodge, and then there were some other drop-off spots, right?
Yep. So I went from Ames to Fort Dodge for a Black Leadership Conference there, where I also received a lot of different school supplies and stuff. And then we went to Iowa City, where we picked up more supplies. And it's a good thing I drive a great big Chevy Suburban, because, you know, I perhaps hadn't counted on quite the amount of generosity I would get from my fellow Iowans. But, you know, the staff and listeners of KHOI, you know, donated quite a bit of stuff. So I showed up and hauled that in, and then I got all the stuff in Fort Dodge and then in Iowa City. I'm like, my goodness, I couldn't have room for even one more slip of paper, pack of cards in here. But, you know, it all in the end wound up being very helpful and very useful. And, you know, the fact that we were able to help so many families that day, you know, makes everything just worth it and makes me so thankful for KHIO staff and listeners.
So how big a caravan did you have from Des Moines to Davenport?
So I left a day early in order to get down there and kind of coordinate with some of the folks, other folks who were there. And from Des Moines to Davenport, we had at least three vehicles that headed down that way, including State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad. And when we got there, I would say we had about maybe all at one time, possibly 20 volunteers. It was difficult to say how many volunteers we had because people would be leaving to go help people move. Other people would be leaving to go and help, you know, let people know who had already been displaced from those apartments that, hey, we've got this event. We can come and get, you know, free items for your home. Mm-hmm. And any material that was left was donated to the Open Door Crisis Center in Davenport. And with some of the food that was left, that was taken to a place called, I think, the Icebox in Davenport, which is also a place that helps, you know, gather food for those individuals in need. So if anything wasn't given away that day, and we gave away a lot of stuff, it still went to centers that are going to be ultimately helping these folks. And, you know, I was just really very grateful for not only all the people who gave donations, but for the volunteers. And, you know, we had a good turnout. So
in the end, did most everyone find places to live?
There are still some people that are struggling to find places to live. Most people have found somewhere to go, whether it be, you know, at the moment, you know, moving in with friends or family. But, you know, it's still difficult for some of these folks because there's three different problems. Number one, not everybody qualifies for the state assistance currently the way it is structured. Not everybody qualifies for that state assistance. The second thing is that the bureaucracy that is involved makes it slow to receive that state assistance. The other problem that you have is that some of the renters in Davenport are reluctant to rent to anybody from Crestwood Apartments. And then number three, some of them are asking not only for an application fee, your deposit, first month's rent, and in some cases, they're asking for first month's rent and last month's rent. Well, for any individual, that could wind up being, you know, a check you have to write of like $1,700. And there aren't too many people I know that can just immediately cough up $1,700 on the spot. And if you are somebody who can cough up $1,700 on the spot, you know, your donations would be appreciated. But, you know, I am fortunate enough that we were able to assist a lot of people in moving, getting a lot of people to new places to live, whether that be permanent or temporary. And I just can't be thankful enough for all of those people who donated and said that, you know, this is a priority.
Well, we sure appreciate all the work that you've done and that you've come back to keep us updated on how they've been able to get some items and get settled in new places. What's your next project you're going to work on?
Well, my next project is to reach out to some of those other communities where they've asked for similar services and see what the needs are. I'm also going to try to sometime in late October or November coordinate a winter clothing drive for different spots around the state because I know that there are folks out there, once again, who are struggling to just make it by from one paycheck to the next, let alone buy new winter jackets and clothing for themselves or their children. You know, all of us, well, a lot of us who have had kids realize they just don't stop growing. And the winter jacket you had last year might not fit your kid, you know, this year. So I want to make sure that we do that in the future.
I'm not sure mine's going to fit either. after this long year of more eating than moving. Thank you so much, Al. We sure appreciate all your work, and I hope you'll come back and tell us about your next projects you have coming up. And thank you for all your work for the communities that I'm sure there's a lot of work behind the scenes that doesn't get spread and broadcast around radio stations and newspapers.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of wonderful Iowans help me.
How are you getting the word out where you need to?
Well, primarily, you know, when I find a need and someone says that there's something that needs to happen here, I try to partner with local organizations and local activists and have them help me spread the word. One of the things that I'm also big on is printing up flyers to distribute because some of these folks that, you know, need our help either don't have devices to get on the internet or don't have internet access themselves. So it's important to make sure that, you know, you're going the old school fashion of setting out flyers in order to help these folks so they know when and where something is taking place.
Thank you so much. And thanks for coming back to tell us how it went. It's pretty exciting for us too. And for our listeners who pitched in.
You guys made a difference in a lot of people's lives that day. And, you know, people were, you know, if you could have seen some of those folks' faces, like I said, you know, the most touching thing was to me that one, I know parents were so grateful to pack up on school supplies and get their kids ready for school. They were very grateful for that. But it so touched me when, you know, I told that woman, no, this dress is free. And she just was like, you know, this is a beautiful dress, and just kind of started to cry a bit. And I'm a big softy, so that nearly made me tear up too. So
thanks again for coming and telling us. That was Al Rambombo. This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Our next story is about the violent events from 1914 to 1941, which shaped the men and women who fought in World War II, known as the Greatest Generation.
Michael Lewick Thrams
is in making a tour with his
museum
right now, and he'll be in Fort Dodge at the Fort Museum on August 19th. That's tomorrow, and he has quite a few stories to tell, which I think may interest our listeners. And so, let's start with
Michael Lewick Thrams.
What happened when he was here the last time in Ames in March of 2020?
My name is Michael Lewick Thrams. I'm from rural Mason City, Clear Lake. I grew up in Iowa. My people go back a couple hundred years in Iowa to the 1830s, so I'm really an Iowan. But I live in Germany, and I am a part-time professor there, and I direct a museum. And I take up time from time to time to return to the Hawkeye State to bring stories that other folks otherwise wouldn't have access to or they don't know about. And indeed, I was in Ames in March of 2020. We had just finished fabricating a new exhibit, so the panels were printed, and we had the lettering on the bus, and it had been painted, and the monitors were all in. And I was so excited and came to Ames because I was supposed to speak the next day to a very important Iowa Municipalities Association meeting, and the bus wouldn't start. So I went out from my lodging that night, went out to the parking lot, and I could have cried because the bus, it just wouldn't start. Ironically, someone towed the bus. I got it started in Ames, got in time to Des Moines. And who were those people? Those were the city administrators, engineers, water experts from dozens of Iowa communities. They have this municipalities association. And why were a third of them missing? Because there was this thing called Corona that had just hit the airwaves, and people were worried. And so many of these city administrators from Cedar Rapids and Council Bluffs and Dubuque, they didn't even come, although people had great interest in this story because one of our five stories is about the flu pandemic of 1918, and there starts our story. So we were supposed to go on an AIDSMA tour. We had no idea when we created the exhibit in 2018, 2019, and then actually got it fabricated and printed and ready to go. We had no idea there'd be a global pandemic taking millions of lives. And we didn't want George Floyd, and that someday our 1920s Meadows Clan story in the bus would also be too relevant. So we have these five sub-stories, and all of them now have a local draw to present day.
So what is the title of the exhibit?
Prequels of the Greatest Generation. And we all think we know what that is about. The Greatest Generation. What did they grow up on? What experiences or historical moments had formed those men who got off the platoon boats at Normandy Beach or later in Asia, and the women too who came and served? How did those people who fought Hitler, who had just survived the Depression and then later would navigate the post-war boom, how had become the people they'd become before the war? So we look at the 1914 to 1918 anti-German hysteria, which of course after the United States ended the war in April 1917 became more intense. But indeed, the largest ethnic group in America, the German Americans, was made into a minority, if you will. Ostracized German Americans were lynched, they were tarred and feathered, people's careers were ruined. Out of that came the awareness of Catholicism and German drinking. So in the 1920s, you had this new thing, the second wave of the Klan, which was very vehemently anti-Catholic and also anti-drink. So we talk about the third exhibit subset being the bootleggers during Prohibition. We focus on Templeton Rye because it's a local Iowa story, but we want to know what was that all about. And ironically, the film we show on the outside of the bus continually brings all these threads together. The Klan was burning crosses. They would come down from Carroll, Iowa, and burn crosses on the German-Americans' lawns in Templeton because they were known to be distilling hooch. So you get all these elements coming together, anti-Germanism, the Klan. Also, in the 1920s, as the Klan arose, the nation had just survived a pandemic. So we have a section of our exhibit about the 1918-1919 flu pandemic. And then there are other exhibits, the last one, which is talking about different farmer rebellions, 1931, 1933. These are different threads that the different Iowa governors were calling out the militia to go squash in eastern Iowa and then 18 months later in western Iowa. So when we talk about the cow wars, we're talking about a rural America that was in free fall. There were farmers who literally, ironically, couldn't even feed their families. They couldn't go to the store and buy groceries because they couldn't sell their commodities for a profit. So we take these five different threads, anti-German hysteria, hate, the pandemic of 1918, the Prohibition era and the bootlegging that rose in its response, the Klan of the 1920s, and the farm rebellions of the 1930s, and you have a very rocky period. So ironically, these men sent abroad to restore peace, as it were, to destroy Hitler and Imperial Japan. They had been weaned on almost anything but peace. They'd known poverty during the Depression. They'd known hardship. They'd known racial hate and fighting between different fractions of the United States. So we're interested in that. You know, we think of them as the greatest generation, but that's not the whole story. And social strife in the 1930s, there were numerous things that we could respond to, talk about as mini wars. Trucker strikes in Minneapolis where people were killed on Hennepin Avenue, 1934, in light of day. There were the bonus army soldiers, 40,000 of them, who marched into Washington, D.C. to strike for their bonus, which Congress had passed, actually, but wasn't supposed to be paid out until another 10 years later. The Ford auto workers went on hunger strikes because they'd been laid off en masse and they couldn't feed their families. So there was all this social strife going on in the 30s, in most part, in response to hard times. And farmers said, well, if everybody else can go on strike, so can we. And they did.
What was the strike in Minneapolis?
There was a trucker strike in Minneapolis, St. Paul. The truckers said, you know, we are driving the nation's clothing, beds, bicycles, radios, corn, coal, back and forth across the country. And this was before a freeway system. And we can't even afford to buy our own kids these things, a new bike, or to feed them. We need more money. And so thousands of striking truckers rallied in Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, and basically scabs and strikebreakers were sent with bats and boards, and Americans were going at each other on the streets of the country in light of day, you know, crushing in skulls with violence. You know, so we pick apart these different stories and say, you know, how could that be? How had the country come to that point that Americans were literally taking swing at each other on the streets of the nation's cities to solve economic or political conflicts? Why all the violence? I should mention, by the way, since we're on the topic, we had just been in Duluth maybe a couple weeks ago, and we parked for a couple days next to the moving memorial downtown in Duluth about the three African-American circus workers who were lynched. So we parked next to the bus, and as I looked out under this memorial, they actually have sort of bronze recreations of the men's front sides on the wall, and I was thinking, what was going on there? And I did a bit of research. In America, the 1920s or teens or the 1890s or before, lynching was far too prevalent, much more than we would like to have true. So 18 months before this horrible lynching, some Duluthians lynched another person, but not black, a Finnish dock worker named Olli Konkanen. So I began to look around into the files and wonder, why was lynching such apparently an acceptable expression of political discord? In other words, I don't like you because of your skin, your religion, your political ideas, I'm going to kill you. So we were fascinated by this idea. Why was that seen as a plausible, semi-legitimate means of silencing those who you don't like? And in a democracy, a purported one, a stride democracy, people need to ask, yeah, what does it mean when we just start going after each other with bats in Hennepin Avenue, because, you know, you want more money and my boss doesn't want you to make more money, or why do I string you up and lynch you from a lamppost? This happened a lot. So we're trying to bring up these stories and say, well, how did we get to that point, and how often does it happen again? We want to believe it doesn't happen at all, but the experience of George Floyd begs a different question. I mean, here's someone being murdered in the light of day for alleged fake $20 bill. So all of the stories that we tell, there are five sub-stories to our Greatest Generation Overall exhibit, they all have a modern equivalent, and that's sobering to see in so many ways we've made progress in this country, there are also some deep fundamental ways that we have not.
What ended it? Was it simply World War II?
Yeah, a lot of what happened was that people simply were focused on the nation at war. There was a total mobilization. And kept people distracted. Plus, the people on high called for unity, national unity, to fight a common enemy, a purported common enemy. And the Klan membership, for example, it had begun to decline in the second half of the 1920s. But after the crash market of 1929, the Klan basically disappeared. Certainly, by the mid-30s, would-be Klan members had other problems. And then when the Second World War began, then basically, there was no Klan to be found. The ideas were still there. We need to be careful about that. But the movement had basically died. And we call it Hidden and Forbidden No More. These are not things that we really take great joy in talking about, but we need to. I discovered about 5 years ago that my own great-grandfather had been the Iowa Klan in Belmont and Mason City. And so I had the question, I have no culpability, but don't I have a responsibility that these sort of things don't happen again? And we'd like to believe that they don't. But they do, and that's the problem. These dynamics they resurface. I teach and live in a country that went through, two dictatorships in the 20th century. If you start to hate your neighbor or hate those who don't share your political opinions, how do you live together? Do you just start being violent and sending people out to camps, or do you have debates, public discussions? Do you find consensus and pass laws? How do we live together? And you have to be careful because when a society becomes so fractured, it so easily drifts into authoritarianism because people rally around a strong guy, a Hitler or a Stalin. So these things keep happening. And that's why really we have a real calling, a real need to do this.
What are the dates and locations of your tour stops?
And then as of Thursday, the 19th of August, I'm really excited we'll be at the Fort Museum in Fort Dodge from 10 until 5, And the first 4 hours, we have programs. We have a special guest speaker coming to talk about the Cow Wars. We're really sort of focusing on, you know, what is this unknown or forgotten chapter of Iowa history when Iowa counties were declared to be under martial law. Cedar County, because of the first Cow War, the testing of dairy herds mandated by the state legislature, and farmers rebelled. But 18 months later, out in Plymouth County and I think O'Brien and Lyons County, you know, farmers there took a judge out of the courtroom and said, you need to stop these forced auctions. We're losing our homes, not just our farms, our businesses. So we're focusing on that in Western Iowa. We'll be in Lamar's later in the month. People can get our tour schedule on our website, www.traces.org. That's T-R-A-C-E-S.org. And you can see we're going to be in Holstein. We're going to be in Spirit Lake and Spencer and Paulina. And in fact, Paulina was also near Primgar. You know, that was also a center of farmer discontent. These are important stories that, again, either we've forgotten or we never knew, and the question is why. Aren't these rather important that martial law can be declared, and not just after a tornado or a flood, but during times of civil strife?
Thank you, Michael. We appreciate your stopping by to tell us where we can hear about these very significant stories from our past.
We are wrapping up Local Talk today with a real change of pace. We have a preview of an event that will be happening in Ankeny on August 27th, 28th, 29th. The Perfect Rendezvous is a play, and we have John Place, who is here with us to tell us how he decided to turn his interest in community theater into creating a play.
Welcome to KHOI, John.
Introduce you to Paul Wearson, who is our best theater interviewer. Hi, Paul.
Yes, I'm here. It's a great show today. A lot of interesting topics. John, tell us about your play.
Well, so I've been involved with the Ankeny Community Theater for more than 15 years, mostly as a performer for the last dozen years, off and on as a member of their board of directors. And I discovered a couple of years ago that I had a knack for playwriting. And I wrote a play that the Ankeny Community Theater produced just before the pandemic hit. It was in February of 2020. And then this became a pandemic project. I signed up for a virtual playwriting course through the Ankeny Community Theater. And over the course of the 6 weeks, we met every week. I came out with a bit of a rough draft of this show that I called The Perfect Rendezvous, and that's been over a year, and I think I'm almost done with it. I keep tweaking it and making changes to it, and I better be done with it because we open on the 27th. You know, the Ankeny, we've been, like everyone, we've been dark for a year and a half. And then the Ankeny Theater, again, I'm on the board, so we decided and voted on a season that would start with the show in October. And, of course, this was months ago we put this into place. And then when the CDC began lifting its restrictions, we thought, well, gee, we could probably have opened sooner if we had known we'd be at this pace. And I said, well, I have this little show here that I wrote. So we fairly quickly assembled a cast. I had actually had it cast for months, and we would get together on Zoom and read it through just for grins, thinking one of these days it might see the light of day somewhere. I hope that would be in Ankeny, since that's kind of my home theater. I live in Johnston. And we saw an opportunity, so we put a rehearsal schedule together, and we've been working towards our open a week from Friday.
Well, tell us a little bit about the plot and the concept of the play, John.
Well, I would be lying if I said that my writing wasn't influenced by my family. My wife and I have a daughter who's 24 years old. A couple of years ago, the show that Ankeny produced was called Otherwise Engaged. It was about a young couple getting engaged, and that was about the time that my daughter was getting engaged. So that kind of inspired that writing. This one is a little earlier than this. It's about a young woman who's ready to introduce her parents to her new boyfriend. But her dad, in particular, is always so critical of every boyfriend she's ever had, except for those that he set up for her that have never gone well. So she decides that they're going to meet her new beau at a nice restaurant on Friday evening. Needing it to go well, she calls a local radio show, advice columnists, if you will, to give her advice on everything to do to impress her dad more than anything. Well, what she didn't expect is that her dad would be listening to that radio show. And he mistakes advice that Ada Lynn gives. Ada Lynn is the radio host, by the way. It's the Ask Ada Lynn show. He overhears part of the conversation, but he's distracted, and he understands that the advice that Ada Lynn is giving is advice for him, which in fact, it's advice that Ada Lynn is giving Zoe, that's the girl, her boyfriend's character. So the fact that he only half listens, so he interprets the advice for him, and it kind of creates this strange encounters and things leading up to the dinner that's at the nice overlook restaurant where fine dining and a beautiful view make for the perfect rendezvous, which is where the title of my show comes. So everything comes together in kind of a madcap way at the very ending at the restaurant where this big introduction is to be made.
Well, hey, it sounds like a lot of fun. John, just remind us of, without mentioning ticket prices, when production is and how to get there, and just give us all the need-to-know details before we go.
You betcha. So people can go to AnconyCommunityTheatre.com, and that's theater spelled theatre.com. And then just in their home page, though, there'll be a little icon for the perfect rendezvous. They can click on that to go to Midwest Tix, which allows them to order their tickets online. There's also a phone number that will be given. That's 244-2771. That's a 515 area code. They can call that and then reach a representative if they have any special needs for their seating, like if mobility is an issue. That's where we will address. I will comment that the Ankeny Community Theater is relatively small. We can't ensure that all seats are going to be at a safe 6-foot distance between each other. So we are allowing people, and we're encouraging all patrons that have not been vaccinated to wear a mask, and we'll have them available at the box office. And those with that want to be seated separate because of COVID concerns, we can seat them on a limited basis. So that's something that would be best addressed with a phone call to Midwest Tix, which is our third-party ticket seller.
Well, thank you, John. This is going to be exciting. Good luck with the play. Break a leg, as they say. And another great moment and another great opportunity for everyone to go to the Ankeny Community Theater.
Thank you very much. And I might point out that it's a world premiere, since I wrote it and no one's seen it before. So that's kind of exciting too.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Gina McAndrews, Bill Wearson, and myself, Susan Franson. Our guests were Leanne Harter, Al Womble, Michael Lewick-Thrams, Katie Kinraid, and John Clays. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m.
At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week, originally aired Monday evening at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. And remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.